Good morning. As always, it's good to see you. And our visitors, we have Visitors Day. I recognize that Logan's got some family here. Good looking people. I wasn't expecting that. Y'all need to understand that he got me the other a week or two or three ago, whatever it was, and he got me good. And he's going to get me again now. We're so glad that y'all came our way, truly. This morning I want to talk to you about our scripture reading, which is that time when Lazarus is raised, and as we go and we look at the passage itself, you can see, as you can see, the story as it unfolds. This is people that he knows and knows well. And so, as we were looking at I think the song service actually fits this very well. This is just before. This is what is going to cause the Sadducees to come after Jesus, because the resurrection of Lazarus is nothing that can be ignored. And so, with there being now resurrection of the dead and it's actually happened, we can't let this guy live. And it is the Sadducees that put Jesus on the cross. Now, the Pharisees have got lots of reasons to go along with it, but it's the Sadducees that can't let this sort of thing go on. And so, as we have read this and gone through, there's much misunderstanding, and I'm going to, since we've already read it, the question is today that I want to, is God there? And when is God there? Now, we'll get to that for us soon enough. But I want you to understand that in the story, what we've already seen is that Mary and Martha have sent news that Lazarus is sick, and Jesus doesn't respond immediately. And so that his sickness is unto death, and that he dies, and that he's been dead 4 days by the time Jesus gets there. And of course, in this particular part of the passage, he is telling the disciples it's time to go back to Bethany. And so we're going to go back there, and I want you to see that during this statement, he makes the point that the sickness is not unto death, and yet he's going to be dead when we get there. So which death are we talking about? That's number one. And that this sickness is not because Lazarus evidently is, you know, for something about him. This is for the glory of God. This is going to be done. He is going to be raised. And the sickness is for Jesus to be glorified. There is going to be no more time that you can denounce that he is just a man saying that I can do things. The apostles know they've been with him. They've seen him still, the wind and the waves. They've seen all that he has done. And the culmination of all that, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. But the people get to see a piece here and a piece there, and they don't have that. But when you can raise the dead, and not just dead, 4 days dead, that's different. The second part of the story is about the apostles. The apostles are with him, and they believe in him. Okay, so when he says it's time to go back to Judea, he says, you know, they're looking to stone you. And I'm one of those people, I love the way words are used. You know they're looking to stone you. But they know that if they stone you, they're going to stone us. And we're not real interested in going back to Judea right now. And so the point is not to remind him, but to say, I'm not real sure we should be doing this. And then Jesus answers, well, there's 12 hours in the day. And the point being is that we work during the day, and the Jews divided the day into 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night. And so that you work during the day is the sense you work when there is light. And in ranching and especially growing of things, being farming, the working during the day, we'll work all day. But some days will be shorter than others as far as daylight goes, but that's not what he's really talking about. He's talking about life. You work during the day while you are alive, because the night is coming when you will not be you will not be able to work anymore. And so he's drawing that contrast. And so Jesus points that out, that he is working now and must work now. And that the danger of the working then is not the point. So he does, he works because he must work the works of God as long as he lives. And that insinuated in this, it is not my time to die. Now we don't have that. We don't have the ability to know when our time is. But I want us to recognize he did, and that he will work, and he understood. The thing is, the apostles do not understand. And when I come to them, that as he's doing this, Jesus has shifted from a physical thing again, a physical description of something that is going on, into a spiritual statement. We're going to wake up Lazarus, that who is sleeping. He is not dead, but he is dead. Now then, who can do that? Who can change that? And so the apostles say, well, if he's sleeping, he'll wake up, he'll be fine. And he says, no, he's dead. Okay? And so he is glad for their sake, that you get to see this. Now why do you think that is? This is a really serious question. Why would you want your apostles to get to see me raise Lazarus from the dead? He knowing that it's going to be that way. Why is that important at this point? I'm telling you, because though the apostles believe, they do not. They think they do. You're Christ, the Son of the living God. And yet, they have limitations on who he is. And so it's important that you see this. And so Thomas, being Thomas, says, well, let's go up there with him so that we may die with him. He has so much to learn, and we recognize all those things. So now we want to switch, and we're going to go to the next few verses. So when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. And now Bethany was near Jerusalem and about 2 miles off. And many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. Martha, therefore, when she heard that Jesus was coming, went to meet him, but Mary stayed at the house. Martha then said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. And Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And she said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into this world. There is an important moment here that Jesus is being revealed, and he makes the point to her that Lazarus is dead. He's been dead for 4 days, but he will rise again. And so as she answers, it's obvious. She has faith. She knows and believes in God. She believes in the resurrection from the dead. She believes, okay? And if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. She believes in the power of Jesus, but she doesn't understand the type of power we're talking about. And so your brother will rise again, and yes, I know he will rise in the day of resurrection. So let's back up and just make a point about this. Even though he is the Son of God and they believe he is the Son of God, they believe him to be like a prophet that is empowered by God, that it's not his power necessarily, that God is granting him his wishes, that what he says, what he prays for, what he does, that God the Father gives him the ability to do the thing, and that he has done great things because God the Father has provided it. Understand that. That's how they're thinking. That's what she's thinking. He will rise again. Yes, he will, through the power of your Father, God the Father. There will be the great resurrection, and by that power, yes. They do not recognize in Jesus that Jesus is the power. He is the Word of God. He has been made manifest in man's shape, but he is God, and they don't get it. I think many times we can do that. I think that sometimes that we have God as being like us somehow, and that we identify with Jesus the man, but we don't understand what kind of power he wielded. And so Jesus, when that is said, he says, no, I am the resurrection and the life. Now what does that mean? Well, it means here in just a minute, he is going to raise Lazarus from the dead, who's been dead for 4 days, and that's not possible. Now, I don't know, what kind of power does it take to raise dead to the point that he stinketh? He's already begun to deteriorate, and that he is going to be restored back to his, not some form of zombie that we have so many movies about, that they walk around but they don't have a mind. And he is being restored to who he was, and well, no disease. All the decay is going to be gone. All the disease is going to go away. He is going to be Lazarus again, a healthy Lazarus. And by his power, by Jesus' power, I am the resurrection and the life. Okay, and so now then, what do you think that Martha thought by that statement? What do you think she thinks? We don't know. I think she doesn't have a clue what that means. You're the resurrection and the life. I don't understand. Now, when Lazarus is raised, it's going to adjust that to some degree. But now then, I'm asking you, when Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, what does that mean with what we know, with the completed gospel? Who's going to judge you in the last day? Who is it that says that those that are mine will not be taken from me, and by what power? And I understand that the Father and the Son are one, and I understand those things, but I think that it's going to be that Jesus is coming in the last day to judge the world, and that is when the resurrection will happen, and it is going to come by his power, and it is going to be his resurrection, and those that join him will be the ones that he knows, and that it is all about Jesus. And so I think that she thinks that this is a future statement, is really what I think, is that he will be raised in the resurrection, but not an immediate resurrection. Jesus says then that those that who believe in him, though they die, will live, and that whoever lives and believes in him will never die. And yet we have the promise. It's again a spiritual statement that every man is appointed to die to this life. But we don't die forever. We die to be raised again into a new life. She answers what I think is a safe statement. I believe that you are who you say you are. But I don't know what you're capable of. That's really what's being said. And then he does it, and now Jesus sets the world on fire by what just went on. So, if you get it, we understand what happened then. We understand that this moved people off of neutral and into either you're a believer or you're not. So my question then becomes, what do you think about God? And I use the Grand Canyon here as what do you think about the power of God? How much power has God got? Now, he created the universe, and he created us, and the complexities we know, and all this kind of stuff, but I'm asking you, from a sense of power, he's unimaginable. And so, Exodus 4 says, "So the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord?'" Do you see that not everyone was meant to be a whole, good, perfect person with no disease and no trouble, all parts working as they should, all those types of things, that God did not do that? That we all have weakness and that we all have, some are visible, some are not visible. We have issues that we have to deal with and that God made it that way. It is not just situational. It is that God did it that way. And so if we understand, you see, is that a penalty for man's sin? Is it because sin entered the world that he made some to be blind and some to be mute and some to be born with diabetes or whatever else that it is that goes on? Is it a penalty? I think it's God's wrath over sin, over what was done. But does God's wrath cause him to strike out against man in a vindictive way? My answer is no. I don't think he does that. I think these things happen. Is God willing to put the whole world under a curse? Sin is a curse, is it not, in a certain way? Yes. Obviously he would, okay? He put his own son under that curse, that because of sin he will die, and that he will die a painful death, and all that's going to go along those lines. Yes, he will do that. Does God curse the innocent and the righteous along with the guilty? How about that? If the rain falls on the just and the unjust, does God put a curse on the righteous? And your answer by logic is, well, yeah. That's what it sure looks like. And then I ask you, really? The God of heaven that is good and always good, pure, he's light, there is no darkness, that? Let me make a point. Christians don't bat an eye when they tell you that he put someone innocent under the curse who was more than innocent. We don't bat an eye that Jesus went to the cross and that the innocent bore the curse of man. Okay? He put Jesus under it, and he was positively full of holy righteousness and love when he did it. When God sent his son. Man had a need, and God sent that need. And it was done out of righteousness, and it was done out of love. And so, you better be careful how we think about some things. I want you to consider Romans, the 8th chapter, and beginning in verse 18, it says this: "For I consider the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." Now I just want to stop right there. I consider the sufferings of the present time are not worthy for the glory that I will receive. Now that is the sense of what we're going to have. And the glory that I will receive, that will be seen. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole world, whole creation, groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. Not only that, but we also, who have been the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. For we were saved in this hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For why does one still hope for what he sees? For if we hope for what we do not see, we eagerly wait for it with perseverance. So, how far will God go to make his point? Does God hate sin? Yes. Will God destroy you? Yes. Does the curse have weight? It does. And anyone who doesn't see that Noah is the whole world was destroyed except for a very, very few, 8. Okay, we need to understand that God did not permit the curse, he brought it. Now think about that. Okay, those that think that God didn't bring his wrath, which is the curse of sin on mankind, doesn't understand the story of Noah. But when the God the Father laid the sins of the world on his son, he carried out his purpose. That was that man will know one day who I am. They will come the way they should have come from the beginning. They will come willingly. They will come understanding. They will come with full knowledge and will give themselves and keep my commandments, and I will walk with them and they will walk with me and we will be one. That every man will make that decision for himself. It will not be by influence. It will not be by the things that men use all the time to make it that their acceptance is God's acceptance. No, it's not. It is you before God. That's what this is about. He made it the way he intended for it to be, that every man will answer to me. I think this is what the time of the judges was supposed to be. That every man ruled his own house and followed God. That you chose that. You and your family chose to follow God. We don't need government. We need God. That's what it was supposed to be. But they never got it. Because they wanted to be like the nations around them. And they wanted beautiful women. And they sold out. And because they did, you know, we get to see why God has set the gospel as it is. That we choose God, and it's necessary. And so, does an all-powerful God then allow Genghis Khan to bury 11 million Chinese? We're talking about atrocities. There's one. Can we let Great Britain firebomb more than 100,000 civilians in Dresden? Can the United States drop a bomb on Hiroshima? Can we do those things? Can we do that kind of stuff? Kill 100,000 there? Many innocent? Isaiah 10. Woe to Assyria, the rod of my anger, and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. I will send him against an ungodly nation and against the people of my wrath. I will give him charge to seize the spoil, to take the prey, to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Yet he does not mean so, nor does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off not a few nations. Is God's wrath real? Oh, baby. And so you can see that he will do against Assyria what he will do because of who they were and their denial that God lives. That God sent Assyria to work on his wrath on his apostate Israel. And it carried them away and took them to nothing. That when they came back, there wasn't enough to come back. And that they become the Samaritans and mix with the Assyrians that had taken their land. And that's what all happened. He literally, God, destroyed those that would not follow. Here, in Habakkuk, Look among the nations and watch, but be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. And that is for Judah, who also fell away. It is right to insist that those who commit brutal crimes are responsible for their behavior. But we can't dismiss that God will do as He purposes in and through their wickedness. Now then, y'all know that Babylon conquered Israel for God's purpose. And they repented, and they came back, and that remnant grew, and the Messiah comes through it. God's purpose. We've been studying discipleship on Sunday morning, and the idea is, who do you give your allegiance to, really? The kingdom of God or America? And have we been influenced? And may we never be. So let's go back to our story and look again that we have from the beginning God's purpose. The baby is born that is going to change the world. And that when Lazarus is raised from the dead, okay, is it because he loved him? They were friends. Is it because he loved him? I don't think so. I think it was for a purpose. Does Jesus favor those whom he loved over those that it does not say that he loved? Does he favor one man over another? No. He died for all men, and he died for all men because all men sin, and he raised Lazarus for the glory of God. He declared God lives. He declared, I am God. He declared himself that you might believe. And so the question becomes, does God allow wickedness of sin to continue because he approves of it in any way? No, not at all. His wrath toward the disobedient is shown by the wickedness of sin, okay? But his love for mankind is shown in a son who showed us what loving, merciful actions do in the lives of men. Jesus made us look for something better. And I'm wanting you to hear me on this because this is not the conclusion we generally come to. Jesus gave us hope. Now we understand, or we think we understand, that all this busyness about wickedness and righteousness and all the stuff and the battles that we go through and what a Christian is going to do and put your armor on and stand and all the things that we do that way is for a purpose that you have hope that God has promised you what will happen at the end of your life. You see, that's what this is about. Jesus did the will of the Father. He did everything he was supposed to do. He did it and did it in front of us. He was the example he was supposed to be. He was the sacrifice he's supposed to be. He is the God he is supposed to be, and he is resurrected. He did everything. And now that it's up and it's there, we have to come to the place of understanding that for a purpose that we accomplish what God says. That we are going to suffer for the sake of Christianity. It is not for ease and that, oh, I go to heaven in the end and then, oh, let's praise His name. It is by the things that we do and that the things that we won't do that we live for God before His purpose, and that it is not about what conveniences I have. His love is not that your life will be easy here. His love is for those who will seek Him, looking to eternity and despise evil, as He does. that the eternity and the hope for those that understand and give themselves for the light of God, that we do that because He sent this Jesus into the world. Lazarus was raised to declare that Jesus is who He says He is. And then we have been left with a hope that declares that Jesus is who He says He is. It is by what we do. Yes, God sends the rain on the just and the unjust, but He also sends pain caused by the unjust on the righteous. Okay, but it is how we respond that matters. Who will I be in the day that torture comes? And if torture doesn't come, will famine? Will a hurricane? What will happen? And we don't know what will happen. And yet, it doesn't matter what will happen because I'm fixed on where I'm going. My hope is for there. That's what I want to be and that's where I want to go. And even though the rain falls on the just and the unjust, I know that it is God that is the giver of life. I am going to defend that. And so we ask the question, who will you choose? Who do you choose? Whose will and purpose do you serve? I hate even saying this, but it's a correct analogy. What battlefield leaves only the good alive? Do you understand that question? Kills indiscriminately, doesn't it? And the good are going to suffer. Do not mock God by thinking life should be easy. It's not. It's not. What I say? Come to Jesus. Come to Him on His terms and find out about that hope. A hope that would carry you through whatever could come into your life and whatever could be. It carried Him through this time where He doesn't open His mouth and that we learn a lesson about behavior. So what will you do with Jesus? There are those that have already chosen what to do. What will you do today? What will you do tomorrow now that we're reminded of who we're to be, what we're to declare? Who will we be? And for those who haven't made that decision, when will you make the decision? How long will it take for you to recognize that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life? It's your choice. And if we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?